Greetings, blenders, and welcome to episode number 54 of Real Blend, the official podcast of the Fire Festival. Aww. My name is Sean O'Connell, the managing director here at Cinema Blend. By day, by night, I am Batman, and also the co-host of this incredible podcast. So joining me, as always, is a man who is now 1 degree of separation from Bruce the Shark.
That's Jake Hamilton.
Of Fox 32 in Chicago. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I am thawing out here in Chicago. If you haven't been watching the news, we've been having historic colds.
I hear it's toasty today, though.
It is. It's a balmy 12.
We also have to say hello to the man whose video of Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper deserves its own Oscar, Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. I made this joke that that video is better than 5 of the 8 Best Picture nominees, and I stand by it. I cry every time I watch it.
That was a pretty wild experience. I mean, I have an entire story I can tell about how that all happened.
But, you will.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, because we haven't really spoken. Since you recorded that, I think we've all had pretty crazy weeks. I mean, we normally are constantly talking to each other in the text thread, but it's actually, I feel like, been a fairly quiet week between the four of us, just because everyone's just kind of had just wild and crazy stuff going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on where you live too, and obviously with the cold and then the story, and there's so much happening. So I'll get into that. It's pretty cool. I'll give you guys the rundown of, like, because he was right behind me the entire time, which is cool. So
I watched another camera angle video, and we'll get to the Gaga story, I promise. But like, I watched a video from her perspective when she was calling him up on stage, and all I could do was look for you and Lauren. I was trying to see where you guys were positioned.
I'm there. I'm wearing the Jackson Maine tan jacket.
That's
and,
so great.
And I'll get into the whole thing. I was like showing off my shirt to him, and like it was cool. But for people who aren't aware of what we're talking about, Lady Gaga called Bradley Cooper on stage to sing Shallow in Las Vegas for one of her shows. It was a big surprise for people who weren't sitting in that area. No one even knew he was there. But we'll get into the whole thing later.
Yes. Well, no reviews this week. So I just want to remind people that we really appreciate your feedback and support. So if you want to head over to iTunes, leave us a new review, we will read it on the show here. You can give us a star rating. I think we did pick up another star rating. We're at 78. But reviews always help us grow the show and promote it. And while you're out there spreading the word, let other people who you think might like the show know about us, because we always like to pick up new followers. Everybody's really active over on social media, on Twitter at Real Blend, and there's been some talk about setting up a page on Facebook for people to be able to connect also, because we find out that like some of our listeners will text each other and start watching movies together like at the same time and live comment on them. And so it's become a fun community that everybody
I stumble across conversations that our listeners are having amongst themselves, and then I find myself almost getting a little bit jealous. Like, I want to be a part of this you guys met through our show. I want to be a part of the conversation.
Tag me every once in a while.
Why haven't we actually started selling actual blenders?
That's a good idea. It's not a bad idea.
Like with Real Blend logo on them. Like, why are, like, everyone uses them for like protein shakes and like their juices in the morning or whatever.
Margaritas. For margaritas.
Yeah. We need to be branding actual blenders.
Gabe, get on that, please. Yeah. Yes, please get to that. Let's start with news. And my intro today, if it wasn't about the Fire Festival, I can't stop talking about the Fire Festival, would have been something regarding the Hobbs and Shaw trailer and how its pure sexiness just might have impregnated me with anticipation, because
there's
that
an
thing
image
is incredible. That trailer's fantastic. This is the spinoff to the Fast and Furious franchise. Allegedly, The Rock and Vin Diesel don't get along necessarily, and Vin wanted to go in a different direction. He'll be in Fast 9, but they also loved the chemistry between The Rock and Jason Statham, and so this is a spinoff now. And I'll admit, I wasn't quite sure how that was going to play, a spinoff of a franchise, like two guys who are introduced as villains in the main bit, but the tone of that trailer is everything that I kind of want that franchise to be. So
yeah,
what do you guys think?
I have sort of been very critical of just how ridiculous and silly the Fast and Furious franchise has become, but I think because they're starting out this side franchise and just leaning into it and acknowledging we're gonna start from a ridiculous angle. I mean, even using the song "Why Can't We Be Friends" in the trailer just sort of says, look, we're not taking ourselves seriously. We're going to have a good time, and we want you to have a good time. I sort of just put my hands up in the air and went, I'm buying it. I'm sold. It looks fun. I am more excited about this than I have been about a Fast and the Furious movie in a while.
I'm a huge Fast and Furious fan, so I mean, I saw the first one, I think, 9 times in theaters. I think I have all the tickets for it, but I've been obsessed with this franchise. I think Fast 5 was when it really kind of kicked into gear, I guess, no pun intended, but like the... that actually wasn't intentional. I didn't know how else to say that. But 5 was amazing because of The Rock, right? 6 was cool. 7 was, I think 7's the best of the franchise.
5, 6, and 7 are fantastic.
And 8 was
8
awesome.
Was a disappointment. I thought 8 was a bit of a disappointment.
I loved 8. See, like to me, like if 8 could be summed up in the idea that The Rock literally moves a missile with his bare hands that causes an explosion while hanging outside of a car. Yes. I mean, like that was amazing to me. And then the Hobbs and Shaw trailer
with the baby was really funny too.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. It's funny you bring that up because that's what I want to talk about. Because with Statham specifically, one of the things I've been seeing online is we're supposed to be kind of like liking this guy now,
right?
The character, and even though he killed Han, which is like a big time. I think he killed him in 6. And, you know, that's a character that really hasn't had justice yet. So I don't know what that's going to play into how we feel about Shaw.
Right.
Because it seems like there's a buddy-buddy thing happening here, right? And then, I mean, I already knew, like, long ago when David Leitch signed on, I was like, this is going to be amazing. Because the guy is, like, one of the greatest filmmakers working today. And the action in that trailer is super clean, looks amazing visually. And also... I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I love watching Idris run down the side of a building as The Rock jumps out and tackles one of his henchmen, and then literally swings back up with a machine gun and gives Statham a cursing explanation into the window. It's a really cool moment. I mean,
isn't that kind of crazy that they can get away with, like, yes, he doesn't say it, but he says it?
I was wondering that, too. That's what I was thinking, is that you can clearly see what he's saying, but
yeah.
what are the rules on that? I guess if you can't hear it... You can put it in there.
There was another movie that did that. I can't remember the name of it. I'm blanking now. But they got away with more F-bombs because they were mouthed. Oh, okay. It was The Martian. It was The Martian.
Okay.
I think in The Martian, he says things that you can't hear. And that's why they got more F-bombs in the film. Because I think, theoretically, you only get 1, maybe 2, depending on the usage. You can't use it in a sexual manner. And you can't put the word mother before it. Or you automatically get the R rating, which is why the gunshot masks the mother in the Live Free or Die Hard, the Yippie Kaye line. Mm-hmm. So, because you can't put the word mother there, which is really weird. But yeah, so I would imagine that because he's mouthing it and you're not hearing it, it's fine.
By the way, Alita has an F-bomb in it, which I was pretty disappointed in. Because it was totally unnecessary. And I think that it's a movie that kids could go to, younger kids could go to, because it's kind of borderline.
No, it's violent, man. That's a violent. I was even talking to Rodriguez about it in the thing I was doing, the performance capture. I said to him, I was like, this movie is super violent. Like, how did you get away with it? And he goes, because we just took out the blood. I mean, there's like decapitations, there's people's faces being smashed. It's
but
violent.
But they're all
man.
Like robots, though. They're cybernetic.
Right. That's why
people.
It works.
Yeah.
Because they're not people. Right. So that's why they get away with all that. But I don't know. I found that movie to be pretty violent.
It is.
I mean, the language wasn't really the problem I had with it in regards to kids seeing it.
Right.
But
right.
I mean, it's PG. It's no. Let me be clear here. This is not an R-rated movie. This is not like, you know, violent R rating. But it's definitely the 13 rating. I think applies probably more to the violence than anything else.
Yeah. Well, we will get to Alita as we get closer to release date. I don't think the embargo is lifted, but we don't want to start talking about it just yet. It's a little bit too early. Although I think it might have a Super Bowl trailer. Let's transition to Super Bowl trailers. The news, so we're recording this right before the Super Bowl. We don't know what's going to happen. The Super Bowl used to be a time when studios would unveil first look footage. Leading into Sunday, the only movie that I knew for sure that was going to have a trailer was Hobbs and Shaw. And then they go ahead and drop it on Friday. So I don't know any ones that are confirmed for Sunday. Do you guys have any idea?
I know a lot of hopes. I mean,
hopes.
I think a lot of people are hoping for an Endgame look.
Right. some new footage. Star Wars definitely won't happen.
Star Wars won't. Yeah, because the only reason that we got it last year is because Solo came out in May.
Right. And they have Celebration coming up in April, so there's no need to really... Like, they'll be the story whenever they release their trailer, so it doesn't necessarily matter.
I just feel like an Endgame trailer is just... There's no... Just take that money and give it to charity for the spot. I mean, like, there's no... You don't need to spend $3 million on a trailer that everybody's already...
They did for Infinity War, didn't they?
They did, remember. Yeah. Infinity War had a Super Bowl trailer.
Infinity War, I understand, but... Endgame does not need a trailer. I mean, it doesn't. They don't even need to do press for that movie. That movie is going to be just...
Right.
The audience is so built in for that thing. It's not even... I take back the press thing. The press thing always helps out, but like with...
He says because he wants to junk it.
No. No, I actually do find that interviews help bring even more awareness, but spending $4 million on a Super Bowl trailer... I don't think that's worth it.
But when they do an Endgame junket, and believe me, Disney, I want to be invited to the Endgame junket also, they won't be able to talk about it. They're not going to show. We're in the situation now with the Marvel movies, especially the Avengers ones, and these Star Wars ones recently, they don't show footage. They don't show the full movie, and the cast often can't talk about it. So that makes it complicated also.
Doing press and doing interviews, like the tonight, like the late night shows, press junkets, those things I think are important. I just don't think you need to spend $4 million. Well, what is the price this year? 30 seconds is 30.
I think that's $4 million.
$3.5 million or something like that.
Also, you're almost being guaranteed that you're putting your product in front of the eyeballs of 130 million people.
So, but how many people watch the Avengers Endgame trailer in 24 hours?
Oh, I mean, a lot.
230 million, I believe.
People know that movie's coming.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like yeah. you're actually. Cutting your audience in half, technically speaking.
Well, just because but there's a difference between 230 million views on a YouTube video and 230 million people watching. That's 230 True. Million views could be, 115 million people watching twice.
All right, yeah. I have a question.
I don't watch the game for the sports element. I'm not a sports guy, even though I'm wearing an Orioles hat. I like the way it looks. But the Super Bowl, I couldn't care less about Tom Brady and the game. I just want to watch the. I always watch for the trailers. And by the way, if anyone listening to this podcast works for the Super Bowl or the commercial network element of that, stop releasing your commercials prior to the Super Bowl. That is the dumbest thing, and it's the most infuriating thing.
I'm gonna play devil's advocate.
I know where you're gonna go. It's more advertising.
Yeah, because we put them on the news.
Like I know, but it ruins everything about why the Super Bowl is fun to watch. Like I don't want to know what's coming.
Okay, on the spin side of that, and once again, playing devil's advocate because I do agree with you. It is kind of a pain to sort of know all the commercials that are coming. In that regard, should they not put movie trailers on the internet? And should we just be surprised by movie trailers that we go see in the theaters? And then we don't see movie trailers in theaters because we go to screenings.
I would rather go back to that than have what we have now.
Yeah, but then...
I would rather...
But we don't pay to go to the movies. We go to screenings where they don't show trailers.
Well, that's our job.
Every once in a while.
No, okay, then let's find a middle ground there. We work in the industry. Show us the trailers so we can talk about them.
So but you people at home don't get it.
What I mean by that is we get the trailers to talk about. Like in regards to we get them to watch, we get them to review. So let me ask you this: when you go to a movie screening, you watch a movie before the whole audience does. Correct.
Correct.
You're not giving your audience the 2-hour movie. You're giving them your review of the film. So why not give us the trailers? We talk about the trailers. People have to go to the movie to watch the trailer. That's the ideal situation.
Yeah, but that doesn't do. I mean, that doesn't do what a trailer is meant to do, which is make people aware.
But how did
you're talking about
back then?
Yeah, but you're talking about because there wasn't any internet. Like that was all they had. Now they had the whole job of a trailer is to get people to be aware that a movie exists.
And but so there's nothing worse than going to a public movie. Like, I go to public screenings. Now, if I miss something, I have to go to catch up on it. And it's 30 minutes of trailers before the movie actually starts.
You've already seen.
I've seen all of them. Yes, I've seen all of them. But I have to believe that the general public probably has it. Remember, we're immersed in this in a way that others are not.
I will say this. There was, and props to First Man for doing this. They actually put a trailer in theaters that did not ever end up online, I believe. The IMAX trailer, which was specifically the Gemini 8 sequence. I paid $21 to see Mission Impossible Fallout just to see that trailer. Yeah. And it was worth every penny. And I was like,
Tom Cruise,
thank
you for your contribution.
Yeah, I know. But I still think it's cool that they did that. Maybe that's a compromise. Maybe there's a version that's in theaters and then a shorter version online.
Sure.
Something along those lines. But going back to the Super Bowl thing, I don't want to see my spot. I mean, I get we air them early because they come out early and they're talkers and they're good for morning television. But I just think it ruins the entire experience. You know what's coming up.
Yeah. You were coming at this from two different angles. We were coming at this as fans and how we want to experience it. A room full of people that are spending $4 million are looking at this as how many people can we get to look at this ad?
I get it, but I get it, but also just put it online right after it airs.
Because also you're talking about like $4 million for the spot. How many more millions to get Jeff Bridges to return as the dude? Like you're talking probably then another $4 or $5 million to
the the Coens didn't direct that video, did they?
They are prematurely rolling over in their graves at the fact that one of their characters is promoting Peanuts.
Is he technically, do we know for sure it's the dude?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Or is he just look like him?
He says the dude abides. He says the dude abides in the spot. Yes.
I haven't watched it. I actually refuse to watch it. I saw it come across my timeline.
It's horrifying.
I have not watched it.
It's horrifying. He says,
Kevin, are you going to get up and go to the bathroom during the game? Like, is that when you take your bathroom breaks?
Oh, yeah. No. That's what I've always done. I don't watch the game. I get up and go to the bathroom during the game, and
would
I don't
you
watch
it if it were the Skins?
Of course. Jake, I'm still going to see 75% of the game.
He's not going to watch the Oscars either, Jake, remember. If Disney came around to you guys and said, we're going to do something very special for the Avengers Endgame junket, and you can pick one person from the cast to interview, but only one, who would you pick?
Robert Downey Jr.
I pick Evans.
Pick Downey. Yeah, I probably pick Downey.
Downey.
This is your last chance, right?
Yeah.
But he started it all. Here's the thing. I was actually going back through some of my YouTube videos the other day.
It's a really good question.
It's a great question. I was lucky enough to do Avengers Age of Ultron junket, and in the piece, I was looking back at it, I couldn't believe I forgot who I'd gotten. Like, that day, I got Downey Jr., Evans and Hemsworth were paired together.
That's awesome.
Ruffalo and Johansson were paired together. Who played Ultron?
James Spader.
Spader was paired with Bettany. Whedon? Who am I missing? Elizabeth Olsen and Aaron Taylor Johnson. It was the entire core Avengers. Basically everyone who didn't disintegrate, right?
Did Joss do it?
Joss Whedon, everybody. Oh, yeah, yeah. And listen, I don't love Age of Ultron, but I was looking back at that. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I cannot believe, like, Evans and Hemsworth and Downey are, like, impossible to get now.
Right.
And, like, luckily, Jake and I were doing junkets, and same thing with you, Sean. Jake and I got Downey for Iron Man 3, which was awesome. I know Jake got him for the first two Ironmans, and I think it was just weird to look at that video and go, oh my gosh, look where we were back then. And now,
which for people who don't know Infinity War cast was so big that they had two separate groups. And each group had like 3 to 4 people who you'd be like, oh, I'd kill for them.
I didn't get a single core Avenger at Infinity War. So Infinity War, it was Brolin. And then by the way, I was happy with my section because I got some great things from them. But mine was Brolin the Russos, Chris Pratt and Zoe Saldana, and Paul Bettany, because he was there from the start, right? But but none of the, no Hemsworth, no Evans, no Downey, no Ruffalo, no, you know, the big guys, none of those guys.
Right.
But so Downey, I think, would be like the full scope to get him to kind of go.
I get that. And my knee jerk was Downey just because he is so difficult to get these days. I think the reason I would choose Evans is just because I would want to talk about the Marvel arc through the eyes of Captain America, just because I feel like Captain America has had the most interesting story arc and character arc. And so that's how I would want to structure my interview and structure my piece, is sort of paralleling the path of Captain America, which also sort of kind of, you know, goes along with the path of Marvel itself.
And for people who aren't aware, like junkets, like we as journalists have interviewed these people for all these movies. And as the films grow and grow and grow, and as you get them more and more, they become more and more limited depending on their time and their schedule. Like, it's very hard to get Downey now. Evans,
which is funny because there was a point where, I mean, if you had me pick the top five people that I've interviewed the most times, Downey would be in my top five. I think I've interviewed him somewhere between 10 and 11 times.
Wow.
But now he's almost impossible to get. So it's funny how over the course of time, someone can go from like, oh yeah, I've interviewed that person two or three times in a year versus like, dude, I don't know if I'm ever going to see that person ever again.
Johnny Depp.
When's the next time we're
Evans.
Ever
going to
get Johnny Depp? We were getting Depp every weekend for a while, and now there's no getting. And then same thing with Tom Hanks. There was a time, the 90s, where Tom Hanks did every single junket, and now good luck trying to get Tom Hanks on any junket.
Well,
now.
Let me bring up another person who we're probably not going to get, and it'll transition us into our next story. Ben Affleck.
By the way, I want to say one thing. We got Depp so many times, Jake, that I got to do a make good of one of my questions.
Yeah.
That's how many times we got them.
That's how you know you get someone a lot when you mess up on one junket and go, oh, it's cool, I'll get them in a couple of weeks. And then you can make up for it a few weeks later.
I need to fix this thing that I did I literally said to Depp, I was like, 2 years ago I asked you this. Can I redo something real fast? He was like, no problem. But yeah. But it's weird, though, to think about that. But like, I barely got Evans for Civil War. Civil War, he wasn't even confirmed. And then like a day or two prior, he was amazing. That was the best I had ever had Evans, was for Civil War. And he was, but I don't know that I'll ever get him again for an Avengers movie, right? I don't know, Jake. I don't know who's going to do the Avengers Endgame job. Maybe they'll have them all do it just for one last hurrah. You know, that would be amazing. We'll see.
All right, let's switch over from Marvel to DC. I brought up Ben Affleck and I mentioned the fact that, I haven't mentioned it yet, but if you're playing along at home, his time in the Batman suit is over and done. And they're going to move on. Matt Reeves is going to do a Batman movie. It got dated for June of 2021. All along, we've been hearing that Matt Reeves' movie was going to launch a trilogy, a potential trilogy. He's got a big story in mind that he wants to do. He's talking about how it's going to be more of a crime noir and play up Batman's ability to be a detective. And he always wanted a younger Batman. The fact that they started with an older Batman was a problem. So how will you guys remember Ben Affleck's time in the Batman role?
Kevin, you loved him as Batman, didn't you?
I think he's the best Batman since Keaton. No question.
Mm-hmm. But do you think he got shortchanged?
100%. I mean, he's a phenomenal Batman. And like everyone... Bale is considered a great Batman because of how good of a job Nolan did.
No,
I don't think
Bale did a good job, man.
Bale was not a great Batman.
You're
he was
not
great
a great
Bruce
Batman.
Wayne. Bale was not a great Batman. His voice was terrible.
No, you,
and also,
why do you hate on the voice so much?
It's not a good voice, and it got worse every movie.
It got
worse
with each movie.
Oh my god!
It got more like nasally. And
he has
like
to cover up his voice. He's one of the most recognizable people in Gotham City. He doesn't have the excuse that Ben Affleck has. He doesn't have the voice modulator.
Affleck's voice sounded amazing.
Because he had the voice modulator.
I don't remember what Keaton's voice sounded like. What was his Batman voice?
Kind of normal. Keaton didn't speak a whole heck of a lot. He didn't have a lot of lines. They never really give Batman a ton of lines.
I think Bale's probably the best Bruce Wayne that's ever played Bruce Wayne. I think that Ben Affleck is top two Batmans. He is unbelievable as Batman. And I think, I'm a huge Zack Snyder fan, and to this day I will say it forever. I love Watchmen, love Batman vs. Superman. The Man of Steel is one of my favorite movies ever. I cannot wait for his next movie, which he's doing for Netflix, which he has literally, they're giving him free reign to do everything.
Who is? Affleck?
Zack Snyder.
Oh, Snyder is. Oh, the zombie movie?
Yeah. They're giving him like $90 million, I read somewhere, to do whatever
I don't think Snyder ever stopped being bad. I don't blame Justice League on him. Like, I still get excited over the concept of a Zack Snyder movie.
Dude, Snyder gets a lot of hate, man. I mean, man,
he also gets
Batman.
A lot of love. Like, yeah, he gets a lot of flack, but you go on Twitter and you say something
really
bad about Zack Snyder and prepare for your notifications to blow up.
Oh, yeah. I'm a huge Snyder fan, and I think Batman vs. Superman Ultimate Edition was amazing, and I am so upset we're not going to get a solo Man of Steel-style Batman movie. And I think Matt Reeves is doing one, but I would love to have seen Affleck get his chance. I still wish he was directing and starring in it.
Right.
But both of those are gone.
Why can't we just get an Arkham Asylum movie? Like, is that too much to ask? Like, it's the simplest idea. You structure it like The Raid. He has to start at the bottom floor of Arkham Asylum and work his way up. And the whole movie is him working. And then you have the excuse to bring in all of the great Batman villains because they're all in different cells scattered around Arkham. It's there. Like, that's all you need. I don't understand why we're trying to make this more complicated than it needs to be.
It's very true. I know. Just sitting there waiting for him. But I just feel like these movies take too long to put together, and Affleck was not just going to commit himself to the role. It was,
Sean,
it was taking too long.
Did you like Affleck as Batman?
I did. Yeah, I did. But I think
loved
that,
him.
I thought he was a bad Bruce Wayne.
Oh, I thought he was a great Bruce Wayne.
No, I thought he was a good Batman. I thought he was a bad Bruce Wayne.
See, I think Bale was a better Bruce Wayne, clearly. But I think Bale's Batman is elevated because of the filmmaker.
No, I think Bale's Batman is elevated because his Bruce Wayne is so good. And because his Bruce Wayne is so good, it made me care about the man behind the cowl.
But his Batman is so bad. It's a bad Batman.
What's
the hockey,
it's not bad.
The hockey pads, dude. Listen,
okay,
the Dark Knight.
You knock on that line. Bale didn't write that line. That you
Which
knock,
line?
Knock, knock.
I'm not wearing any hockey pads. What makes us different?
That's not his line. You're acting like he was there, like writing the script. Knock Nolan if you're gonna knock anybody for that line.
He's not a good Batman.
Yes,
and
he
listen,
is.
He's not a good Batman. He's a great Bruce Wayne, and The Dark Knight's one of the greatest movies of all time. But he's not a good Batman.
You can't say
transition
he's a bad Batman, and then say he's in one of the best Batman, like one of the best movies of all time. That makes no sense.
It makes perfect sense.
That argument makes no sense.
I bet you he's on screen more as Bruce Wayne than he is as Batman.
No. That's like saying honestly, and I'm not like blowing. That's like saying one of the three of us is one of the worst film critics of all time. But this is a great podcast.
I never said he was one of the worst Batman.
You said he was
a bad Batman. He's not a good Batman.
You're saying he's a bad Batman, but it's one of the best movies of all time. The two of those don't go together. It makes no sense. That makes no sense.
I want to acknowledge the fact that they announced Christopher Nolan has a new movie coming out. We don't know anything about it. I don't assume we're ever going to know anything about it. It has a release date.
I love that Nolan is at a point in his career that they straight up say it's an event film. Because it's Nolan. Like, we don't know the title, we know the release date, and the studio goes, it's an event, and they drop the mic and they walk away.
Do you guys remember when they released that first teaser for Dunkirk, and it was like that, the shot of the long...
Is that when all the men turn around and like walk up in the sky? Yeah.
All the guys, the soldiers...
Do you remember?
And
like
then
what
the one guy turns to look? Is that what happens?
That one guy's face looks up, and then, I mean, that was one of the greatest. And Interstellar had a similar one. They did like these little minute teasers for Nolan. Gosh, I cannot
wait. Has he mentioned anything at all of what he's working
on? I was
going to
ask you guys,
on?
Have you heard anything
well,
from
Kevin
Nolan?
No, honestly.
That he's...
No. I mean, I don't know what he could possibly... like. I would assume he's going to go totally different genre, right? So he's already done superhero. He's already
romantic
done...
comedy.
he's going to remake Gary Marshall's Valentine's Day. I would actually watch that.
I would watch that.
And he shoots it in IMAX, and every time there's a love scene, they go to 65mm IMAX.
I was going to say he's going to do a romantic comedy that skips through time, but that's just sort of about time.
I would watch a Nolan musical. I'd watch a musical by Nolan.
Nolan remakes Greatest Showman, but better.
My parents are dead. I have no father.
Oh, you know what? I'm reading the Inception script right now. So I'm like trying to read a lot more screenplays. And I got the Inception script online, and I got the book. I like reading a hardcover book and everything, whatever. There's a great interview in the middle of, in the beginning of the book with Jonathan Nolan and Chris Nolan talking about how Inception came about. It is unbelievable. That script is genius, by the way. If you have a chance, if you don't know if you guys ever read scripts, but like if you get a chance to read that script, the way he writes how you transition from each time zone or each, you know, layer of the dream is unreal. Like the guy is actually a genius. He really is.
But I will say about Nolan the same thing I say about Tarantino. I'm dying for one of them to do a contemporary film. I miss when they do. Like, I think the closest Nolan ever did to a contemporary film would be Inception or Memento, I guess. Memento is a contemporary film.
Insomnia.
Well, I was saying Insomnia.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so. And Tarantino only has Pulp Fiction and Reservoir Dogs.
What do you mean when you say contemporary? You mean like traditional?
Something set in our modern times.
Isn't Batman in our modern times?
Yeah, Batman's in the modern times.
I don't know.
It's in a fictional city, but it's still in our modern times.
Yeah, Batman's 2008.
I don't know. I kind of thought it would be like earlier. Like
no, because like think of like the planes that they use.
Interstellar's in our time, isn't it?
No, Interstellar's in the future.
How far in the future, though?
Enough so that all of our crops are dead.
It's not that far in the future, is it? It's like 20, maybe 2020 something? Let me look.
No, dude. It's like, that's the whole point, is that the Earth is dying. We have to leave.
No, I know that, but what year is Interstellar?
Hopefully it's not set a year from now.
The question is, though, he's saying...
Oh, it feels like it's 100 years.
let me look.
Zing. All right, while you're looking that up, because I do want to know that. Let's transition to the Screen Actors Guild Awards, because for this main reason, we had a surprise at Best Ensemble.
Interstellar's mid-21st century.
So that's like 20...
So what's that mean?
That's like 2050.
Okay, so it's not too far off.
It's 30 years! The future!
Black Panther wins Best Ensemble at the Screen Actors Guild Award. Do you think that helps its Oscar chances at all?
No.
No?
No.
Jake, are you muted? I didn't hear you say that.
No.
Oh. Not at all?
No, I just don't... I think it's going to be really hard for a movie to win Best Picture that isn't nominated for a single acting award. It's not nominated for directing. It's not nominated for... I don't think it got an editing nomination. It didn't get a screenplay nomination. I just don't see it winning Best Picture and then nothing else.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it could win some of the like below the line stuff, but you got to win at least one of the other big ones, don't you?
Last year's Screen Actors Guild Award went to, I believe, 3 Billboards.
Yeah.
And that ended up losing to...
Yeah, but that still won. I mean, but that was still nominated for screenplay. It was still nominated for a couple of... 3 different acting awards. I mean, like, Black Panther doesn't have any of that going for it.
SAG doesn't necessarily always line up with Best Picture. No. But I think with Rami Malek and Glenn Close, they seem like our winners.
Yeah, it looks like... I mean, I think Malek is probably the one that has the best chance of losing compared to... Between her and Glenn Close. I mean, him and Glenn Close.
Now, if Malek loses, he'll lose to Bale.
Yeah, agree.
Those are the two. Now, I'm just... It upsets me so much that Bradley Cooper is no longer... I was just rewatching Silver Linings. That guy has one of the greatest ranges of any actor I've ever seen. He's amazing.
Right.
And Star is Born is, in my opinion, his best role of his career... Completely disappears in the role. It shocks me that Star is Born is possibly going to go home with just song. Like, that is unbelievable to me. It's a great film. And, you know, I don't know. Black Panther winning SAG, I don't think that means it'll win Best Picture. I think right now we're still looking at Roma. But it's weird. Like, think about these waves we go on, right? Right after Critics' Choice... We're on a big wave of Roma, right? We're like, we're very into Roma winning. 10 nominations, it's gonna win, right? And then SAG happens. Black Panther then takes that front seat. Not theoretically, not literally, but it does. Right now, the Roma momentum's gone, right? We don't even feel
it. I don't think it's gone. I mean, Roma wasn't nominated for SAG, so I don't think anyone really thought it was going to.
No, I know, but are you feeling Roma right now?
Dude, I wasn't feeling Roma when it came out.
No, I know that. I'm talking about, are you feeling the
buzz? No, I know
what
you're saying.
No,
I'm not.
Okay, but is it because...
I think any given day, you can arguably make a case for any of these films to be the front runner this year. No film has solidified itself as, I'm the film to beat, necessarily.
All right, right now, by the way, remind me, we're mentioning Roma, I watched Velvet Buzzsaw, if you guys
want. I think that came out on Netflix
briefly
today.
Mention that if you want.
It opened today.
Well, yeah, I watched the screener last night. Right now, as we sit here, Best Picture winner.
Roma.
I think Roma.
I'm going to say...
I think A Star is Born might win.
Green Book.
No.
Really?
If Green Book wins, I'm going to be... I like that movie, but if that wins, I'm going to be so upset because it's not...
It won Producers Guild. That's the only reason. But then Peter Farrelly didn't get a director nom, so... I don't know.
Neither did Ben Affleck, and it won Argo won Best Picture.
Yeah, but there's much more goodwill for Ben Affleck at that time than there is Peter Farrelly. No one is waking up sad for Peter Farrelly for not getting.
Did you just say goodwill and then Ben Affleck?
I did.
That's pretty funny, actually.
That is pretty funny.
I don't know that you knew that you said that, but you did.
Kevin, give us a quick review of Velvet Buzzsaw.
No spoilers.
I watched it last night. No, I won't spoil anything. You guys know the basic concept of it, though.
I do.
Okay, basically, for people who aren't aware, it's the same director as Nightcrawler, which was amazing, Dan Gilroy, and Gyllenhaal's character is an art critic. A unknown artist dies, no one knew who he was, and his paintings he left a note or a request saying that every one of my paintings needs to be destroyed the day I die or when I die and not resold ever. Anyways, that particular part of his art gets out there. The curator starts selling it, displaying it. The art is haunted somehow because of his dark past. And that then leads to people dying because of the art coming to life. That's the trailer has all that in it. It's not, okay. not a spoiler. Is the movie great? It's not as good as Nightcrawler. Gyllenhaal is amazing. And the beauty of this...
I love Nightcrawler.
Me too. And Gyllenhaal, to me, the beauty of this movie, and it also being on Netflix, thinking about how many people are going to watch it because Gyllenhaal's in it, it's another reminder of how brilliant of an actor he is. And I think every time he comes out with a movie, whether it be Prisoners, Donnie Darko, Enemy, Zodiac, the guy is one of the greatest actors of our generation.
I agree with
that. The guy has insane range.
And doesn't get the respect for that, I feel
agreed.
Like.
100% agreed. Like nobody talks about really how great Jake Gyllenhaal is. We need to do Gyllenhaal blend. That'd be a good one.
Ooh, that would be a good
one. But he is unbelievable in this film. The problem with the movie is it's a bit too on the nose, meaning that there's like shots that specifically, not like the nail in A Quiet Place, but shots that specifically, they feels like the director's like, hey, come here, let me show you something real fast. That's going to be important later. They do that a bunch of times in the movie. It just feels like they're trying to do that rather than being more subtle. It also is paced kind of poorly. At times, it kind of it does feel like it's dragging, and I don't normally look at my watch or look at the clock on my wall. But I did a couple times in the movie. I'm like, wait, there's an hour left. It's good. It's just not great.
That sounds like the perfect movie for me to watch on Netflix.
Exactly, and you know who's really great in it is Toni Collette. Well, amazing great, performance. And I really liked. I'm blanking on her name. But the lead girl in the film, I wish I knew her name off the top of my head. She's the one that that finds the art. I can't remember her name. I'm blanking. She's amazing. Whoever her name is, incredible performance from her. I liked it. I give it like a 3.5.
That's good. That's enough to get me to watch it. And also, yeah, I didn't hate Roman J. Israel. I had issues with it.
I liked it.
I didn't love it. I thought it was fine.
Is that his movie?
Yeah.
I liked Roman J. Israel. I interviewed him for that. I didn't know that was Dan Girl. I thought Roman J. Israel was one of Denzel's best performances. That was a great performance. But it was not really... I don't know. I love that movie, actually.
Kevin, going on a quick tangent back to Nightcrawler. Does your station use... We don't call them Nightcrawlers. We call them Stringers. Does your station use those guys?
Wait, so are you talking about the extremity of what he went to?
No, the concept of hiring freelance photographers overnight to shoot footage that you're...
No.
You guys don't use them at all?
Not that I know of.
We,
no,
we I use mean, them, and I try to get... when that movie came out, we don't call them night crawlers. We call them stringers. Like, did you get... Or are we going to buy this stringer footage is what it's referred to.
So they would go out and shoot things and sell
it. So what happens is, you know, like, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning, you don't have photographers... On the clock in the off chance that something happens. So if there's a really bad car wreck or if there's a murder or whatever the case may be, there are these guys, like in the movie, whose job it is to listen to police scanners all night. And if they hear that there's something going on, they pack up their crew and then they go film it. And then what they do is they call all the TV stations and say, hey, that fire, that house that burned down on 34th Street, we've got footage of it. We'll sell it to you for this.
Right.
So I just didn't know. I know our station here in Chicago. In Chicago, it's pretty popular. I just didn't know if it was commonplace in all markets.
I didn't know, but I mean, for people who haven't seen Nightcrawler, Gyllenhaal goes to the extremity of causing accidents and actual crimes to film and then sell to the stations, which was a very crazy thing. But it also fed into this idea of what we. Of the television business, what we tease, what's, you know, what people want to watch.
It was very critical of what we do in our business and then also what we do as consumers of our business.
Yes. Yeah. And it's funny you say that because I just finished watching the Ted Bundy documentary, the docuseries on Netflix, which is a 4-part series. It's an incredible documentary series if you have a chance to watch it, if you're into true crime. Jake, I know you're on episode 2.
Correct.
Three and four is just... riveting. But to speak to what you're saying, I didn't know this. I didn't know much about Ted Bundy, except the idea that people were criticizing the Zac Efron trailer for making him too likable. That's how he was.
That was the whole thing. You know,
he stood up.
Yeah, we differentiate serial killers, unfortunately, by like very glaring things about them. You know, you said Gacy was the guy that dressed up as a clown, and and Manson was the guy that had the cults. And to me, before I knew anything about Bundy, and now we seem to be in like Bundy mania right now. Bundy was the one I categorized as like, oh, he was the good-looking, charming one. Like that was always how I categorized Bundy. That's who I thought he was.
Dude, there are women who went to the courtroom to watch the case who were infatuated with him. Like they would come out of the court case that day and be interviewed, and they were like talking about how they liked him, and it was like, and he's on trial for murder. And it was like, and that's the weird thing about the movie, and that's why I found the criticism of the Zac Efron trailer to be a little strange, because when you watch the documentary and get to episode 4, by the way, the documentary is directed by the same guy who directed the film, Joe Berlin.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, so the guy who directed the 4 series documentary, I think he also did the Paradise Lost one, the one that got the guys out of prison from the West Memphis. So he directed the Efron movie and the 4-part docuseries. When you get to the courtroom stuff, Efron nailed it. Like, it's that's what he did. He got up. He would defend himself. He had a whole
the
show.
The knock I heard on the trailer isn't that they isn't so much about how they portray Bundy. It's just that it portrays the film incorrectly.
Yeah,
they said that the film people at Sundance say that the movie that I saw is not the movie that's portrayed in the trailer. And that's sort of the knock that I heard about it.
It's cut weird. Yeah. It's almost cut
fun.
Very,
it looks
like,
fun. Well,
yeah, but here's the thing: when you get to the episode 4 of the Ted Bundy doc, that was his thing. He looked into the camera, he smiled, he like charmed people. And
did he Huey Lewis in the news?
Oh God, yeah. but I mean, here's the thing: this guy was horrific, and everything he did was absolutely horrible. But when it comes down to documentaries about true crime, it's riveting. Like and like they, I mean, I don't know if you guys know this, Jake, you're in episode 2. They had a journalist in the jail cell on death row with a recorder talking to him for over 100 hours, and that's what we're listening to. And then the editing of the documentary takes us back and forth across state lines to every crime and every prosecutor, every defender who worked on it, friends. Jake, dude, do you know he has a daughter?
I did not know that. Spoiler alert, dude.
Well, it's in real life. I mean, that's a real life thing.
I'm joking.
But, I mean, you know what happens to him, correct?
I do.
Okay, all right. So, but yeah, I watch it if you get a chance. It is riveting, like very, very, very riveting.
All right, speaking of riveting, Sunday morning I woke up, checked my phone, and one of the first things I saw was a video that my friend Kevin McCarthy posted on Twitter. A video that by the middle of the day it was up to 2 million views. And showed it to Michelle immediately, and the two of us were just enamored with this footage that Kevin captured of Bradley Cooper joining Lady Gaga on stage to sing Shallow. And it's even better than what I was eagerly anticipating watching at the Oscars, which was them singing the song together. But in that sense, it would be such an artificial, you know, it's not going to be able to capture exactly what this performance captured, which was, and if people haven't seen it yet, pause the show, go search it on YouTube.
You don't even have to search it. It's been retweeted a billion times.
Everywhere.
As soon as he posted, because I saw it when he posted it pretty early, my first thought was, that thing's about to blow the F up.
I got it up faster than you could imagine, because it was the last song, and I was staying at the hotel that it took place at, so I was on the Wi-Fi. And I knew that everyone in the building was on their cell phones. The LTE was probably not working. So
okay,
I shot a 4.
Let's back up a bit. How did you get there? Why were
you there? Okay. So it was totally random. I was at that show. I bought Lauren tickets to see Lady Gaga for Christmas. And I purposely, I am a big advocate of getting in the pit. I like the pit area of a concert. I don't like sitting in the seats. I like
and
to be
meet and greets. You do meet and greets.
Yeah, sometimes. Like Kendrick Lamar, I don't know if I'll ever meet him, so I wanted to meet him.
Did they have meet and greets for Gaga?
Oh, yeah.
What does that cost?
Like $2,000 plus. But that's the base. Like that, they're all sold out, I think. So
I mean, like knock on wood, luckily we've all been in a room with her.
I know.
Like, but yeah,
thankfully,
to your point, Kendrick Lamar is someone
for free.
You know, for free.
Yeah.
Hey, case in point, I was paid to be there.
That's true, Jake. You got that's funny. So I wanted to get pit tickets. Now, credit to my wife, when I got to the show. So I had seen footage online of that she performed Shallow at the end of the show.
Okay.
So there was a piano that juts out at the end of the stage. There's two shows she does. One called Enigma, one's called a jazz. and piano show. I wanted the Enigma show because she was doing performance capture for it, actually. And she was posting it all over her Instagram.
Different hotels or two different shows, and they just trade out in the same location?
Same hotel, same location, just the show itself
interesting.
Changes.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's cool. So she... basically, we get there, and I knew I wanted to get over to to that piano and be right there. Now, Lauren is 5'2", I'm 6'2½", 6'3", so it being that close and the stage was high, she couldn't see over people, so she requested that we stand back against the barrier. I was near a trash can the whole time, actually. And we sat there, so she could see right to the stage. And so, I'm 25 feet from her piano, basically. 30 feet from her piano. So, show starts at 8 o'clock. She doesn't go until 8:15. 7:50 rolls around. I'm standing there. I'm wearing my Jackson Maine jacket that I wore for my Halloween costume when we dressed up as Jackson and Allie. And I had a Jackson Maine, like, fake concert shirt that you would buy at a Jackson Maine show. Like,
where did
Stars
you get
Born.
That?
They made, for one of Lauren's birthday gifts, or I can't remember what gift it was. It was anniversary. I got Jackson and Allie concert shirts that Star is Born actually made.
Oh,
I bought
God.
Them online. They were like back ordered for like a month and a half. So my concert shirt was like, it's literally Jackson Maine, as if he's a real musician playing guitar, and you would get it at an actual concert. That's what it looked like.
That's insane.
So I wore that just, you know, because I just wanted to, you know, it was a Gaga show and wanted to support Star is Born, whatever. So I looked behind me at 7:50, and Bradley Cooper walks right by me. And we lock eyes. He continues walking, turns around, says hi, but doesn't stop because the swarm of people in the pit who just saw him are now phones out. Like, Bradley Cooper's here. This is a huge deal. Todd Phillips is with them. And so they sit down literally right behind me. Like, I'm talking two, maybe seven...
Poor Todd Phillips. Talk about being the most ignored person in the room. Sitting next to Bradley Cooper at the Gaga concert.
And I got a story about him, too. He said, you know, because Todd Phillips produced Star is Born. So they sit down, and then at one point...
Were
like,
they looking for Justin Bartha? Because he's on the roof.
Yeah, he's on the roof. So I look at Cooper, and I open my shirt, and I'm like, and he's like, oh, that's awesome, whatever. Like he looks over at Todd, he's like laughing. Probably, I don't know what he said. Maybe this guy's an idiot. I have no idea. No, I couldn't hear him.
I have no idea who this guy is.
I think he probably said, like, that guy's interviewed me a couple times or whatever. Because, you know, I've interviewed him like 10 times probably over the years for all the hangovers or whatever. So I was like showing off my shirt, and Todd produced the movie. So it was cool that I was wearing the jacket, and
that's
they
awesome.
Probably appreciated it. So show starts, and it's weird because Bradley Cooper's now looking right in your direction the entire show. So it's a little nerving.
So you
like
know every move you make. Like if you put your arm around your wife.
Yeah.
Bradley Cooper's
gonna like,
know.
I was like, I know. Is my phone out? See, I've actually gotten to a point where I don't like taking my phone out at shows. And I've actually made it a point to only pull it out for maybe a couple songs and put it away. I remember Prince used to say, like, he would do a show and say, put your phones away, and we'll take them out for one song, and we'll all do it together. Because I think everyone's at concerts now is on their phones, and listen, I'm guilty of it. I posted a video that went viral, but I mean, it's like, but that was because of what it was. Anyway, so show starts. She comes down from the ceiling playing guitar. She's doing Just Dance. Cooper's like, I'm like watching Bradley Cooper. Now, that was the other thing. How many times can I turn around and look at him without it being weird?
Right.
Like what's
I'm gonna
he
say
doing?
One. You yeah, get like, one what? Time. And then it's weird. So how many more times than one did you turn around?
I'm saying three. I'm putting the number at three.
No, but then
okay,
you start
over,
making...
under is 3.5. What do you choose, Sean?
That was way more than that.
All right, I'm going to take the over.
But you start making up ways to turn around, right? Like, yeah. You like, look at other things. Like,
he does like a yawn.
Like stretch, yeah.
Oh, it spins yeah. him all the way around.
So he's wearing like a hat, it's backwards, whatever. So he's hanging out. So at one point, she tells everyone to take out their phones and show their lights. I look back, I'm like, is Cooper going to do that? He did that. He was like really into it. I was very curious to know if he knew any of her lyrics. I didn't look at his face during some of the songs. I would like to know if he knew any of her songs.
I think
I'm
he
sure
does.
He does.
By now he does, yeah.
Yeah.
They so anyway, so much time together.
So, okay, so midway through the show, Bradley Cooper gets up to go to the bathroom. And walks right by Lauren, and I stops, shakes my hand, says hi to Lauren. I show him my shirt again. He's like super excited, and he goes to the bathroom, and he comes back. And then he sits back down, Okay, so now we're getting towards the end of the show now. She plays Born This Way, and then all of a sudden, like, she comes out on stage wearing, like, this black shirt, the short shorts, whatever she was wearing, and starts, like, talking about Bradley Cooper and this movie Star Is Born. So she's, like, you know, she's down at her piano. She's like, there's someone very special in the crowd tonight. Keep in mind, there's over 5,000 people in this crowd, and only where I was sitting, people knew he was there. Think right. about the rest yeah, right, of the right, venue. Right. No one... Now, I would love to have kind of been in that situation where I didn't know, and it came on stage, but then I'm happy where I was, too. So...
Do you think he knew that she was going to call him up?
That's... So I'll tell you why I don't think he planned on singing. People will argue it was a publicity thing. I think he had an idea he might get called up there just, you know, just to say hi to the crowd, or maybe they would shine a light on him, and I thought she was going to go over to him with a microphone and just say hi. Because okay. she was coming down from the ceiling in some of these sequences and some of these songs. She's an amazing performer, by the way. If you guys ever seen her live, she's incredible. I've seen her. That's my second time seeing her. Anyway, so she talks about this. She goes, there's a little movie called Star Is Born. Shallon called Shallow. She looks over and she goes, I'm going to be a little bit chancy tonight. And she's like, Bradley Cooper is in the crowd. Everyone starts freaking out. And, like, he doesn't seem fazed by it. He's just kind of like, you know, yeah, I'm here. This is kind of cool. He's wearing a hat. I mean, it didn't look like he was planning to go on stage.
Right.
Then, you know, eventually she calls him up. He gets up. He didn't even know where to go. Like he had he got up on his own and walked. And then the person was like, oh, no, you're going the wrong way. Then he had to switch around and goes on stage. Gets on stage. And if you watch the video closely, I don't think I posted this part. He had trouble hearing in his ear
what?
The song. Oh, yeah. So what happened was, so if in the first minute he's on stage, it looked like he didn't know what he was doing.
Right.
He actually made a joke. He goes, Jackson never wore these things. Remember that whole bit in the movie where he wouldn't wear the in-ears?
Yeah.
So he sits down at the piano, or he sits down, like, near the piano, and, like, you know, he kisses Gaga and says hi to her, whatever it was. And there's, like, a minute exchange where he's like, I can't hear anything, guys. Like, I don't know what's going on. So Gaga had to stay on her microphone to her tech guys. Bradley can't hear anything. And then Bradley goes, I can't hear anything. I've never even, you know, I don't know. I've never worn these before. Anyway, so...
I was listening to how long the guitarist had to play the opening riff.
Yeah.
He was playing it the entire time that she was setting it up.
So, and interestingly enough, so when he starts... So they start playing the song, and the video is crazy. She's like kneeling before him, like he's like singing. He's a little pitchy in the beginning because I think he was having trouble getting adjusted to the ear thing. If you actually go two bars into it, he finds the notes and then it ends up being perfect the rest of the show. But I'll tell you right now, it was surreal. And it's funny because I didn't want to record it, but I knew that it would be, I knew it would be a big deal because it's the first time they ever performed it. And that was, what you saw is what you saw. I mean, I sat right there and just, and I knew I wanted to shoot it. What's the word? Vertical?
Right.
Yeah, whatever. So it wouldn't,
vertical
so it wouldn't
is
have
up
the
down.
Bars.
Vertical
yeah, horizontal. Down. Sorry. I always get those two confused. Like it's and there and there. Anyway, so...
it was incredible.
It was incredible. So they sang the song. The best part about that video, by the way, is him when she sits down and then he starts air guitaring. Did you see him like air guitaring and like rocking out? And then it was unbelievable. So then full circle, show ends. And probably about 10 minutes before he went on stage, or no, right when he left to go on stage, I turned around and said hi to Todd Phillips. I said, hey, Todd, because no one was talking to him, right? Like, I mean, and I love Todd Phillips. I think he's a great director. I say great because I think he is a great director. Anyway, so the show ends, song ends. I pull my phone out. I'm like rigorously trying to like, you know, I want to get it uploaded. And I feel a tap on my shoulder. And I don't look up for like 3 or 4 seconds because I'm still typing. And I look up and it was Todd Phillips saying hi. And he turns around and
you
we
blew
connect
off
real
Todd
fast.
Phillips?
I didn't mean to. I didn't know it was. I didn't know he was going to say hi to me.
You're not getting the
Joker
junket.
Yeah.
Oh, so Joker. He's doing the Joker. Come
and
on.
And then get this. And then Lauren wanted to go to this club thing. I'm not a club person, but there was a club in the hotel right across from the venue. And I'm like waiting in line to get in, and then Flea walks by from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, cool.
I think he was at the show. I don't know for sure, but it was surreal, man. Like I mean, like and Bradley when Cooper started doing the part where they duetted together, where they actually do the harmony, in the Shallow part, it was so emotional. I mean, we all love that movie, right? I mean, it was crazy.
And the critique, not the critique, but the comment that I saw most under your video and other versions of the video is that those two are in love with each other. Like, they're literally, the eye contact that they're making with each other, I know he's, is he married to the Russian supermodel?
I don't know.
So. I know they have a child together, but I don't think they're married.
He and Gaga look like they are about to consummate some sort of relationship, man, because they look super into each other.
It's like how Gabe looks at us whenever we rap on time.
Yes.
So never.
Another reason why I don't think it was planned is, like, Bradley, like, his hair was all messed up. He had a hat on. I mean, listen, I don't think, you know, there was no way he didn't think it could be possible.
Right.
That she would call him up. But I don't think they practiced it, and I don't think they planned it. Because if they had planned it and practiced it, the ear thing would have been set up. It would have been perfectly ready to go. There would have been a minute technical issue. I mean, you're talking about professionals here.
That's a really great point, because you're right. It didn't look like he was prepared to get up there. They would have rehearsed something. He would have been able to just jump on stage.
It would have been
smoother
than that.
That's even more incredible than that it worked as well as it did.
But maybe I'm just naive. Maybe I'm naive. I don't know. I want to live in a world where I don't think it was planned. But, I mean, listen, it's totally possible that he had an inkling that she may call him up. The whole time I was sitting there, I thought at one point she's going to just come over to where we are and sit with him and do a talk or whatever it was. I don't know. I had no clue he was going up there. It was crazy.
Well, Kevin got to see two of our biggest current stars. Jake got to interview one of our most iconic classic stars. Jake got 30 minutes this week with Richard Dreyfuss, and not just Dreyfuss for, like, Krippendorf's tribe. Like, he got him specifically for Jaws with a little mix-in of Close Encounters.
Yeah. And there's nothing more intimidating than having someone sit down and go, just so you know, I've been asked everything there is to be asked about Jaws.
No, if shut up. You, did he say that?
If you ask me a question that I've heard before, you owe me $10. If you ask me a question that I haven't heard before, I will give you $10. And he said it in that really cool, kind of gravelly-ish, smooth Richard Dreyfuss voice. I'm proud to say that when the interview was over, he admitted that we were about square. He said, I've heard some of them. Some of them were new. Huh. We'll call it square.
That's cool, man.
That's awesome.
Wait.
Can I ask you a question then? I'm sorry. I don't want to interrupt you. I'm just learning this for the first time. After every question was asked, would he tell you if he'd been asked it or not?
So whenever I would ask it, I was first thinking, like, God, I hope he doesn't do this the whole interview. Because I would ask a question and he'd go, you owe me $10. Which is essentially him going, like, I've heard this question before.
That happened to me with Francis Ford Coppola, and I'm an idiot. I challenged him on a director of a movie, and I said, there's no way Michael Mann direct Last of the Mohicans? Is that the movie I'm thinking of?
Yes, he did.
We got into a whole discussion, and I said, Michael Mann didn't direct Last of the Mohicans, and he goes, yes, he did.
You called the director of The Godfather an idiot.
So Coppola goes, because Coppola didn't want to talk about movies, he wanted to talk about wine. And so I said, okay, if I'm right, I get to ask you more Godfather questions. If you're right, I'll ask you more wine questions. And, of course, he was right. Anyways, continue.
Is he condescending?
Dreyfuss?
He comes across as a little bit condescending.
You know, I will say that I was told beforehand, just so you know, he doesn't really like talking about Jaws. And I said, well, that's going to suck for him because I got 30 minutes worth of Jaws questions.
Wait, but he was there for a Jaws screening, right?
But his argument was, you know, I've done other things too. And I've done other things. You know, he won an Oscar for Goodbye Girl. He did Close Encounters. He did What About Bob? And I said, you know, I'm talking about Jaws. I mean, you know, when else am I going to get Richard Dreyfuss? I said, look, man, as I'm doing Jaws questions. I'm sorry. And it turned, you know, I had questions prepared. I had enough questions to last probably an hour, much less 30 minutes. We ended up going about 35. And I found myself just listening to a guy tell stories. Because I could tell he's a guy who likes to be listened to. And he's a guy that likes to captivate people. And I think, even though maybe he genuinely doesn't like talking about Jaws anymore, I went back and watched the video, and the video is on a two shot, and you could tell that I'm just captivated by this guy's stories. And as he starts telling the stories, you could tell he starts telling them with a biggest smile on his face. He starts laughing when he tells them, and he gets into it more and more because I think he liked that I was into them as much as I was. And one of my favorite stories, he was telling that Jaws, because they shot all over this island, was one of the first movies that really used radios to communicate with each other to all the different crews all over the place. And they said the people on the island would buy these radios and turn them on so they could hear what everyone was saying. So they said throughout the day you would hear,
"The shark is not working. The shark is not working."
And they said then about an hour later you'd hear,
"The shark is working. The shark is working."
And then he said then about 10 minutes later you'd hear,
"Shit, the ship is sinking. The ship is sinking."
And he goes, and then he goes, "I was on that boat that was sinking." And I said, "Okay, well, the boat's sinking. You got $500,000 worth of equipment on there. You got film crews. You got sound guys. You got actors." I said, "In the hierarchy, who gets off the boat first?" And he said, "According to Spielberg, Spielberg's saying, get the actors off the boat. Get the actors off the boat." And he said, "Our sound guy, who's about 70 years old," he said, "he's trying to get the sound guy off the boat." And Spielberg is screaming, "Dreyfuss, get off the boat." He goes, "I'm trying to help this guy, 70 years old." And Spielberg goes, "Fuck him, get off the boat." So just like those are the sort of stories that I'm sitting here listening. I'm sorry, Gabe. I know that we're now going to get that little red expletive.
That's okay. Thing, hey, next if the beard podcast. Says it,
yeah,
we let it go.
And so it's 30 minutes of just those kind of stories. And he's at an age now, he's 71. He's at an age where he just doesn't really seem to care anymore. He went off on this rant about how he will not do anything for Universal regarding Jaws these days because they didn't pay him anything. And especially once the movie blew up, they didn't then try to say, "Hey, here's a thank you. Here's a little cup of couple of shekels for you."
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they tried to get him to do Jaws 2, and he went off of this whole thing about he wouldn't do it because he didn't get paid. And I was doing the interview in the atrium of a hotel. In the middle of the interview, someone one of the crew members at the hotel starts trying to vacuum behind us, and I kind of stop and I go, "Hey, I'm sorry. We're doing an interview. Can you hold off for just a few minutes?" And Dreyfuss turns around, and looks at him, and then looks at me and points at the guy and goes, "That's the head of Universal."
Just was he kidding?
Yeah, no. Well, he was kidding. Just because he's just so curmudgeon-y about getting screwed over 40 years ago that he's still holding on to it. And I think I'll wrap it up quick. I think one of my favorite things. I said, when was the last time that you watched Jaws? It's on all the time. I mean, AMC plays it almost on a loop. And he said he hasn't watched it all the way through since before it came out, from start to finish. Wow. And he goes, occasionally, he goes, "Sometimes if it's on cable, I might turn it on." He goes, "But I'm 71 years old. I'm about to prepare to die. I don't have time to watch that movie again." But he said it with a giant smile on his face. So, that's the best. He was dry. He was funny. He didn't give an F. And it was just, I just found myself, I was watching my, our news crew, we aired some of the interview this morning on our show. And they went back and said, look at my face. Because my face was just staring at this guy who was just telling these stories that I could have sat there for. And eventually, I had to get the rap.
And we've talked about that when you're sitting across from certain people, that we can prepare as much as we want for it. But until you're in the moment and then I'm sure all three of us do this. We visualize how it's going to go, right? This is what it's going to look like. I'm going to be talking to this person. And then when they're talking, I do this. My brain says to me, this is the actual person. This person who you've watched their movies or you've, kind of obsessed over their work. And then you're like, when it's the actual person in front of you, it's really hard to process that. And with someone like Dreyfuss would blow my mind.
And also the number of credits, as you guys know, very quickly, if it's going well, it changes from an interview to a conversation. And then you could have 30 questions prepared. And I went back and looked at what I had written, and I think I only got to 10 of them because he would say things, and I would follow up, and I'd go, what do you mean you were on the boat when it was sinking? What do you mean you were the first ones to get off? What do you mean that you and Robert Shaw actually did get along, that the whole rumor about you guys fighting is a lie?" And he just told – I just found myself just talking to this guy, which inherently makes it harder to edit because it's a little bit harder, but – I'm going to, I aired chunks of the interview in our morning show, but I'm actually going to be putting together kind of a four-part series for our weekend show that's the story of Jaws through the eyes of Richard Dreyfuss, because I kind of was able to structure the interview enough to get the beginning, the middle, the end, and then bleeding into, because on the set of Jaws, he heard Spielberg talk about this alien movie that he had been thinking of. And we talked a lot about the controversial ending of, not controversial, but the ending of Close Encounters, where Spielberg famously says that he would change now. And it was a really fun.
What were his thoughts on that?
He said it was interesting. He said, the whole reason that he felt like he got the role because they were looking at Gene Hackman, they were looking at Pacino, and Dreyfuss went to Spielberg, who had told him, "You're too young, you're too much of a child to play this part." And he said, "You need a child, and you need a child because it takes a child to leave behind his family to go with aliens. Only a child would do that." And he goes, "So it's funny to me now that Spielberg is saying that now that he has children, he would never have written that." Oh, because wow. The whole point of Dreyfuss getting the part is that it was an acknowledgement that because he is a child, because only a child could become obsessed with something like that and forego his family to chase after right. this wild dream, literal dream he was having. And it would take a child to literally, not even, I mean, remember when he got on that boat, or not boat, Jesus, whenever he got on the alien spacecraft, he hadn't spoken to his family in weeks. I mean, his wife took the kids and he got on. There was no bye. There was no calling. Right. There was no, like, you know, Bruce Willis talking to his daughter before he died on the asteroid moment. He got on and he left. And it genuinely does take a borderline selfish person to do that. And that's how he says he got the role. So his point being, I don't understand why Spielberg's saying this, because that was the whole point of it to begin with.
Because he kept in touch with Spielberg at all as he said that?
Spielberg, you know, so Dreyfuss had a lot of drug troubles in the 80s. And Spielberg was really one of the people that helped him out, because then they did their third movie together, Always, in the late 80s.
Yeah.
He was really one of the people that helped him out with that. I don't think they're in touch as much anymore. It was just a really, really nice conversation.
Where can people watch the interview?
I'm going to be posting it on my YouTube channel. I'm going to be cutting together. So it's 35 minutes, so it's a lot. So now I'm in the process of going through the 35 minutes and taking out what it is that I specific, like the meat that I really want to use. And out of the 35 minutes, there's taking out my questions and really only using the stuff that I want. There's 20 minutes of what he is saying that I want to get. So like I said, I'm going to be putting together this huge, lengthy package for YouTube and then giving it to my producer and going, how much can we air? I always compare it to, like, a sculptor starts out with this a giant rock and somehow chisels it down into something. So right now I've got this giant rock of Dreyfuss and I'm just trying to chisel it down, and I'm going to be working in footage and clips and all kind of stuff. So it'll be a fun piece, but based on what I want it to be, to quote Dreyfuss, it's going to be a bitch.
In the text chain, Jake was sending a lot of Dreyfuss things around to all of us, and we're sort of mentioning movies that he should ask him about and come up with questions. And I went down a rabbit hole and found a Spielberg BBC interview, which is probably around the time of Ready Player One. There's a guy on BBC One who does pretty good interviews.
Oh, I like that guy.
Yeah, he's good. He's a good conversationalist.
It's called the Movies We Love or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good excuse for them to talk about... Yeah, movies. Yeah, yeah. Movies That Made Me. It's a good excuse made me or something like to that. Talk about the entire really filmography.
So, yeah, I like him. He goes, I'm only going to limit it to your sci-fi, basically, because there's just too many movies to talk about. So he does E.T., does Close Encounters, does Minority Report, gets to Ready Player One. But then he goes, okay, rapid-fire questions at the end of this. And he goes, what is the coolest movie memorabilia that you've kept? Wanting to get something from Spielberg's own films that he's held on to. And Spielberg says, I have the Rosebud sled. And it was like the greatest mic drop.
I remember hearing that. Yeah, that's right.
I've never heard in my entire life.
Yeah, that's crazy.
He's like, they had three of them.
Yep.
And Wells burned the second one, and he liked the way that the shot looked, so the other two ended up in an archive at RKO. And Spielberg bought it at an auction, and he has the Rosebud. He has the Rosebud sled.
If you guys he's a great interviewer. Any movie prop ever, what would it be?
Oh, that's a great question.
I know what mine would be.
What would yours be?
The actual hand, Terminator hand from T2 when they go in, when, the actual, the
that's
arm
great.
That they go into
that's
in Skynet.
That's a good one.
And grab.
That's a good one.
That's what I would probably keep.
See, my knee jerk was to say, like, one of Luke's lightsabers, but I feel like there were just so many, because Mark Hamill's been very adamant every time, you know, I feel like every 6 months there's a story about how a lightsaber goes on the auction block, and Mark Hamill tweeted the other day, just so you know, used like 50 of them a movie. There is not just one, so I think I would pick the fertility idol from the opening of Raiders.
See, mine was the Grail, the
good
cup.
One.
And I saw that cup at ILM. It's in a glass case. And I took a picture of it in the briefcase. And I always, like, twice I've used this on social media as my profile picture. And it just makes me look like a God Squad person. I'm so into religion that I have to put a picture of the cup. And people are like, really? You're really super into religion? I'm like, no, no, no. It's from Temple of Doom. Last Crusade. No, it's from Last Crusade. It's a prop, and it's too much explaining. Cool. So anyway,
now that I'm thinking, I kind of want the briefcase from Pulp Fiction. Now
I thought about that too.
That's cool.
Sweet.
That's a good one. That's a really with the batteries inside,
or the cheeseburger. Or the
Sprite
cup.
If it's a McDonald's cheeseburger, it looks the exact same.
cheeseburger. I rewatched Pulp Fiction last night. That cheeseburger looks so appetizing. Yeah. When he picks it up from Brett's plate there. Jake, I can't wait to see the interview.
It sounds awesome. Give me like a week or two, because based on what I have envisioned, it's going to take some time. It took me an hour just to pull out all the sound on tape, little chunks of sound that I want. So I'm excited to do it. That was, you know.
Is that what SOT stands for? Yeah, I've heard SOT my entire life. Yeah, sound on television, I never knew what it stood for.
Yeah. Sound on tape, VO is voiceover, MOS is man on the street.
That one I knew. The only movie opening this week that we can discuss is Miss Bala. Have you guys seen Miss Bala?
I have not.
I saw it, yeah.
I saw it. It was okay, right?
Yeah. I thought she was great.
It exists. It's a film.
She's really good.
Really good.
The movie makes some weird decisions, I thought.
Yeah. One thing I will give it credit for is the layering of the villain. I thought that was an interesting... I mean, I think villains should be layered and shouldn't be ultimately good or bad people.
Yeah.
And I thought that their romantic tension was interesting to me. Yeah. I mean, you're talking about a kidnapper and the person he kidnaps... And then there's this romantic element there that's like, I thought that was really handled well. I mean, there's some, it's not a great film by any means.
I mean, it came out in January.
There's some good stuff in it, and she's amazing. I like when she like kind of takes it on full on action. That was pretty cool.
I think it's a full on coming out party for her as a big screen actress. Like,
yeah.
I think that you'll start seeing her in more things.
It's her first major motion picture leading role.
Yeah,
It's fine. It wasn't that bad, to be honest. I actually kind of liked it.
When can we talk about Lego Movie? Then next week, probably next week. All right, stay tuned for that. This week's blend game, Amy Adams blend. Ooh, this is gonna be a fun one. I think we have to leave a little bit of room for conversation for Amy Adams blend. I don't know, Gabe. Did we all pick the same one? No, we didn't. Okay, interesting. All right, so
I figured I would be the odd man out.
You might be the odd man out.
I cheated this week. I have two.
I know when Gabe saw people's choices, he was very intrigued. So Jake, I've been told you get to go first.
So I chose based on performance, not based on film. And my favorite Amy Adams performance, and this is not the one that I first thought I was going to go with, and then I started going through her filmography, and then I caught this one, caught my eye, and I thought, I do really like that one, and I just kept coming back to it, and kept coming back to it, and I finally ended up having to choose it. Ooh. Is Enchanted.
Oh, all right.
I just think she's so perfectly, and I think part of it too is I remember being so surprised by that film. I actually really, really adore that movie, and I just think she so perfectly captures what is both lovable and just brilliantly annoying about Disney princesses. And she takes sort of the cliches and the stereotypes of this sort of iconic image of what a Disney princess is and so perfectly blends in with the cynical world of today. And I think she completely disappears behind the part. I think that is a part where if you didn't give it 110%, if you didn't just sell it absolutely, it would fail. And she
100%.
She dives
in. That's the point
in.
I was going to make, is that movie flops if the person gets it wrong.
Exactly. And she got it right. And that movie, Dempsey is good in that movie, and Idina Menzel is good in that movie, James Marsden?
I think is great as the
prince. And they're all good, but they're all fighting for second place. They're all acting in her shadow. That movie is her. It works because of her, and it would have failed because of her, but it didn't because of her.
Yeah, that's fair. I want to mention Jim Mehta, who is a follower on Real Blend's Twitter, who says, I'm looking for a shout out because you keep showing my pick for Amy Adams blend. And he also picked Enchanted. And I think every time that we teased it and used the Enchanted GIF, which is also a great GIF of her being so super excited.
I mean, I used to, you know, I use GIFs whenever I tease our episodes. And I used to specifically pick the GIF for a movie that I wasn't picking. But then I thought, but then I'm sort of showing my hand because I'm telling you a movie that I'm not picking. So now I'm going to start blending. Now I'm going to start like using gifts sometimes for movies that I'm picking and sometimes for movies that I'm not. So you don't know.
All right, I get to go next. And you're 100% right, dude. I looked at her resume and I was like, oh, that's my pick. Oh, no, wait, that's my pick. She's been in so many good movies. And that's why when Kalina and Carrie were having a conversation that like...
They don't...
Her performances haven't moved her yet.
They didn't say that they didn't like her. They just said there hasn't been one that they've fallen in love with.
The one I was right about to pick... is Doubt, and I've talked about Doubt on this show before because it is such an actor showcase.
Yeah, great movie.
But she's the fourth best person in that incredible cast because I'll put Viola Davis a smidge above Amy Adams, and it is true that Amy Adams quite often plays the person who is lobbing softballs to other people to hit home runs out of the park with. Right, there's a talent to that for sure. So for that reason, I couldn't pick Doubt, and I had to choose Arrival, because Arrival is unbelievably brilliant.
How did she not get an Oscar nomination for Arrival?
That is the biggest crime ever. I can't. Whenever I'm going to side with Kevin when he argues about how irrelevant the Oscars are, my argument falls to Arrival, because if they can't recognize the brilliance of that movie and her performance in it, and again, much like Enchanted, in the wrong hands, that performance falls apart, right? But she can bring so much to the character that it's just, she has to be incredibly intelligent. She has to be extremely emotional. She has to stay grounded in the face of all of this weird stuff that's happening. And quite often act against a black blob that's just moving around and trying to find a way to communicate with her. Like, how many people have the ability to actually do that?
And there's no telling, I mean, what that actually looked like on set. She's probably acting against a wall.
Yes. And she, I mean, the reason why the PR shot for Arrival is just her wide open eyes staring in awe, you know, at whatever she's seeing and learning and reacting to. She's a genius. And I think that, again, the fact that I don't think that movie is underrated. I think enough people who have seen it recognize what it is, and it doesn't need an Oscar. You know what? I'm glad the Oscars didn't recognize it, because they're not cool enough to understand. And Denis is building a cast for Dune that looks like it's going
to
be...
Oh, I just bought that book. It just arrived today. I'm about to crack it open page one tonight.
Nice. Well, I've never read the cast is unreal. I've never read it either. You know what? I'm going to read it too. I don't have it, but I'm going to order
2-day delivery. Yes. Amazon, baby. And get it quickly before you get it with that little stamp on there that says soon to be a major. I hate that. Soon to be a major motion.
Yeah, me too.
So order it quickly before they start putting the stamp on there.
I used to always go to the bookstores and go to the back of the section to try and find the one that did not have the Now is a Major Motion Picture on it. I hate that too.
Shout
man.
Out to my buddy Chase, who's an avid listener of the show, and that is like he will actively not buy a book.
Yep.
If that's on there.
Really?
Yeah.
I like Chase.
What about if it's the actors from the adaptation?
Oh, he definitely would. No, you're talking about like the movie poster is the cover?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Like if you buy Ender's Game and it's like Asa Butterfield on the front.
Like I still have Ready Player One original, like before it turned into the book, which was cool.
Yeah. And the cover for Dune now is actually pretty cool. So yeah, hop on there and get awesome. That.
Kevin, you're up.
Yeah, so I went with Arrival as well. So it's interesting. Like to me, I fell into Jake's frustration from a couple weeks ago about favorite favorite performance and favorite movie. My favorite movie she's ever been in is Man of Steel. But my favorite, it's an amazing movie. And Sean is so wrong
about
it.
I'm not going to argue with you.
We're running out of time.
Thank you.
We are running out of time, and I cannot do the Man of Steel debate. I promise everybody
eventually,
we will do the Man of Steel debate sometime soon.
Eventually we will. Jake and I love it. It's one of the best superhero movies ever made, and Sean hates it. All right, so favorite movie she's ever been in, Man of Steel. Favorite performance, Arrival, no question.
But her performance in Man of Steel is not that great. Like, it's not, she doesn't have a lot to do in that movie.
My favorite movie she's been in is Man of Steel. That's point
fair.
I'm making.
Yeah,
yeah. My favorite performance from her is Arrival. Arrival is, it's so funny to me because, like, you know, the whole circle theme, right? And, like, I spent months, like figuring that out. Like, and I remember at one point I came up with a theory that was like apparently was wrong, but I still believe it because I feel like a film, you can come up with whatever you want and how a film speaks to you. But also a testament to her as an actress, you read the script, you know the ending, and you still pull off that performance, like, unknowingly. Like, that's an art form. Like, if you, when you know the twist to a movie that you're in, like, selling us that you don't know it.
Right.
You know, any twist in any movie, that you could say that about any actor, right?
So true.
But, wow, like, that twist blew my mind. And she's so great in that film, emotionally, the Renner thing, everything about that performance, the score. And the thing is, it's everything about her performance to me is enhanced by the filmmaking as well. Johan Johansson's score, Denis' direction, cinematography. Deakins didn't shoot that, did he? I don't remember who shot that. Deakins shot Blade Runner 2049.
Yeah.
But I mean, everything about her performance, everything you said, Sean, emotionally, the grounded element of it, we are learning this through her eyes, right? So it's like, you know, we are going on this journey with Amy Adams' character. The twist specifically, I will never forget seeing that for the first time. And then the rewatch on that movie is just brilliant.
I've never rewatched it.
Oh my God.
Dude,
it is amazing. But it's funny, Enchanted's a great pick too from Jake. I loved Enchanted. I haven't seen Enchanted since it first came out. I need to go back and rewatch that. But you know what she's really great in was Vice. And I didn't love Vice, but she is brilliant in Vice. Like, absolutely brilliant. And even in The Fighter.
I would have said The Fighter, too.
She is an amazing actress.
I prefer her in The Fighter over Vice.
She's great in American Hustle. Isn't she in American Hustle?
Yeah.
Wait,
she is.
Yeah.
I'm not a big American Hustle guy.
Fighter.
Yeah, I don't love Hustle, but she's great in American Hustle, though. Like, what a performance.
I just didn't like that movie. So that,
I didn't love it either.
I like the cast of Silver Linings Playbook more than I liked American Hustle. American Hustle seemed rushed to me for some reason.
Hustle was... Like, Joy was probably my least favorite of his movies,
yeah.
But I still liked Joy, kind of, but Hustle was definitely not Silver Linings, Fighter, Huckabee's level. Not at all.
Arrival was Bradford Young, cinematographer.
Oh, Bradford Young shot...
Solo.
Yeah.
But he did Most Violent Year. He did Selma. He's a very talented cinematographer.
He didn't do Wrinkle in Time. Oh, Selma. He did Selma. That's right.
Selma.
I couldn't remember what Ava DuVernay film he worked on, but it was Selma.
What would Gabe pick?
What would Gabe pick? Huh. I think Arrival.
No,
he
just gave us a face like, come on, Jake.
Yeah,
he's a huge Arrival fan.
Arrival. Arrival. Is Arrival's Denis' best movie?
No.
Yes.
No.
I would argue...
It's better than Blade Runner.
No, it's not.
Prisoners.
Prisoners.
Arrival. Ooh. Arrival's definitely... It's his best movie. It has to be.
I would say Denis is probably one of the, like, I think, top three most exciting filmmakers right now.
Gabe is saying that Dune is his favorite book and that Denis is his favorite director.
Dude!
Highly anticipated.
I was about to start a whole conversation with Gabe, but he's not mic'd up, so that does me no good. I have questions.
Wait, why?
For you.
Mic Gabe up.
Why don't we just give Gabe a mic?
Why?
I was just about to ask that question. We're 54 episodes into this show. Why can't we get Gabe on the show with us? Chime in?
Yes, I feel like he should.
Maybe this is his genius plan.
Be careful the path we're heading down. Imagine him being able to tell us. To rap. Tell us to rap.
Very true.
We start getting IFBs, Jake. He's like pumped through our ear and it's like 30 seconds.
I'll do what I do at work.
Yeah.
For those of you at home that can't actually see us, I just took my IFB out and just dropped it on the ground.
Cat2323X says she can't decide between Enchanted and Leap Year for favorite. Leap Year is a bad movie. I'm surprised someone said Leap Year.
Was terrible.
I hate to jump on someone's choice, but Leap
Year
is a bad movie. But Cat2323X, you gotta branch out a little bit more. But she says Arrival is
defend it. Defend it to us. Defend Leap Year.
Or yes, exactly. Send us an email to realblend@cinemablend.com or go on social media and tell us why Leap Year is your favorite Amy Adams choice. We also, a lot of people said Arrival, including Ziggy Popkin. Raj Saw, RAJSAW94. Andy Erickson USD says The Master. God, The Master.
The Master.
Oh my God.
Holy cow.
That's a great
performance,
once
again,
by the way.
Like Doubt, she's great, but she's like third.
Yeah. She's
the
awesome
third or fourth
when
best
she's
best
in.
In that movie.
I know.
But she's
know.
So good in that
she's
movie.
Good. Like, she's good. Like, she's good in
Master.
Doubt. But
Andy
she's...
Erickson says, well, because the whole film is an acting masterclass, and when you can hold your own with Joaquin Phoenix and Philip Seymour Hoffman, you deserve the credit. That's very true. You know, yeah, like, not to underrate, like, when I say that, Yes, even in Doubt, she was holding down scenes with Meryl Streep.
She got an Oscar nomination
and,
for Doubt. Like, I'm not knocking.
Yes. Ah, she's incredible. God, the master. I completely forgot that.
Arrival has got to be her best movie, though. I think it is. It has to be.
It's so amazing. The fun part about Arrival is watching it with somebody who hasn't seen it, because I watched it with Michelle. And I just kept waiting. I kept waiting.
I took Chris Van Vliet to see it, our friend Chris from Miami, and I had already seen it twice. And I'm like, we're going to see this in Dolby because the sound is unbelievable. And I just, like, you just sit there and you go... I'm waiting for that twist to hit when she goes up to the ship. Oh my god,
that's awesome!
That whole thing is just devastating. It's what a performance! What a movie! Who thinks of stuff like that, man?
Nicky Nick at Nicky Nick 305 said American Hustle. So a lot of great interaction on social media. She's very good.
It's so weird. Like the past, like in December, I felt like I ran into her like 20 times in LA. Like it got to a point where we started joking about how we were following each other. Like because she had Vice and she had, wait, no, it was Vice, but I kept running into her at different hotels that she was doing press for Vice for, because right. I was at different junkets at different hotels that she happened to be at as well. So it got to a point where like fifth or sixth time running into her, it'd be like we started making jokes about following each other. She's like, she is so nice, by the way. Like one of the nicest people. I don't know if you guys have interviewed her.
Yeah,
she's fantastic. Cool. Like super nice. And she was my favorite interview that day for Vice too. She was awesome.
She
that
is
day.
Someone that I would put in, and you guys know what I talk about when I say this. There's a category of people that I'd say it's impossible to get a bad interview with them. And if you do, it's your fault.
Yeah.
And I would put Amy, like a Will Smith, a Tom Hanks. And I would put Amy Adams in that category.
She told me a really cool story, because I was asking her, there's that scene in the movie where she tells Christian Bale, you know, women can't run for mayor, women can't do this at this time period. And I was like, you know, is it weird to say that out loud, knowing the time you're in now and like
question.
How things have changed? How does it feel like to say those words? You know what I mean? Like, could you imagine if that was still happening? And she said, I brought my daughter to ADR, and I was in the room doing that scene in ADR, and my daughter was next to me, and I was saying those words, and then she looked over at me and said, Mom, was that really how it was at that time? Like, imagine like not knowing that time period ever existed, and then learning it through a dialogue that your mom is saying in a movie. Like it, like I can't imagine. Like and she said it was a great lesson, like to be able to like talk. Like that is such a cool thing. Like to have that experience as a kid to like see your mom be doing. I don't know. It's wild. That blew my mind. I was like, whoa.
Any truth to the rumor that when Adam McKay cast her in Vice, he almost changed the title to Nice?
See, that actually wasn't that great, Sean. Sorry.
Come on.
That was pretty
good.
Wow.
Like,
yeah. I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding.
Give me some.
You know what, Sean? I give you credit because I actually was holding off today on my puns.
Well.
I was actively trying not to do them.
All I can tell you is that she's a nice enough person that no one wants to fight her.
Can we go down
you
this
guys.
Path?
That's it. I did one. I got nothing. I'm done. I'm out. I quit. I was really proud of that.
Have you heard of Amy Adams' favorite director of all time?
No, but I can tell you that this pun sucks already.
Yeah, you haven't heard of it? Oh, no. she loves him. Man of Jordan Peele.
Yeah, that really.
What? I don't even get it.
That was really bad, dude.
I don't even get it.
It makes perfect sense. She's in Man of Steel.
Wait, that was really
Jordan
bad.
Next week, director.
Next week, in honor of Cold Pursuit. I never thought I would say that sentence out
loud.
Hey,
I liked Cold Pursuit.
We are doing Neeson Black.
Yes!
The films of Liam Neeson. Yes. So play along using hashtag Neeson Blend. And let us know your picks if you want to via email. We are at RealBlend, RealBlend, at cinemablend.com. Of course, you can go to the social media page and follow us at RealBlend
and
on
Jake,
Twitter.
If you have any doubt about if it's favorite or best, you know, just ask Gabe next week.
Yes.
You know what
the
I mean?
Silver lining playbook to this week's episode is that
that's
we didn't
the thing. You have to American Hustle to get this show right, Jake.
Oh, God. Now he's out of control.
You have to get this right, man.
This
it's
is why
not
no one's commenting.
Right. It's not right what you're doing.
That's right. Do us a favor. Yes, go over to the iTunes, leave us a review. It means an awful lot to us. It helps us grow out the show. We are soon going to be able to announce two, I think, very exciting things that we're doing with the show.
What are we doing?
You guys don't even know yet. Yes. One is a contest.
What?
That's going to have actual prizes. You cannot win. You're disqualified. And one is a potential meetup that we have cooking that everyone's going to want to know about.
We'll
give you time to plan for it.
Have you guys heard about Amy Adams' favorite American Idol?
Oh, my God. In this episode.
Favorite American Idol contestant?
No. Ruben Studdard?
You guys didn't hear about this?
What? No. Carrie Underwood?
No. Bo Vice. You guys didn't hear about that? She loves Bo Vice.
Goodbye, everyone. Bo Thanks Vice. For listening. We'll talk to you next week.
I'm so sorry.
Dunkirk!
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.